society. I have a few more listener submission stories for you this evening, so thank you to Soccer Girl 31, Tragic 2316, and user Queen Choco for sharing their stories with us. A big thanks goes out to our producers for this week: Danielle Newhouse, Ginger Cornejo, Mike to the D, Kat Ohala, Devin Williamson, Savannah Segeda, Pixel Donut, Janelle Ross, Michelle Tate, and Diane Nolan. I'd like to say hello to our newest Nightmare Society Campfire member, Claire. Hello, Claire. And hello to Lena Love Bunny, Damien Carr, and Pranay Singh, as well as Matt and his fiance Allison, a couple who listens to Nightmare Society together, stays together, or so I've heard. Happy birthday to Allison, who celebrates hers this Saturday. Now, get comfy and prepare yourself for another episode of
The Nightmare Society.
This happened when I was about 6 years old. My uncle had just died and we were at his funeral, which was at my church. My cousin, we'll call him Dan. So Dan and I went to explore the church because it was small and our moms were close by. So we walked down each hall and I looked into each room, and we were shocked to see that someone was in a room. The person we saw was behind a piano, so we could only see his head. His hair was thick and tangled like it hadn't been brushed for a very long time. As we scanned the room, we looked at the bottom corner of the piano and saw a giant foot attached to a giant leg. But that's not even the weirdest part. We could see him shaking his head like a madman and banging on the keys. Dan and I ran as fast as we could. Our moms said it was nothing, so we decided to go back to see if we were just imagining things. And when we went back, he was still there, but it was completely silent. No banging, no head shaking, just him sitting there. As we watched through the window, we saw a huge, gloved hand reach and grab the top of the piano. Then we saw the man's face. It was a young face, but his eyes were bloodshot and he looked really angry. Dan and I were frozen to the spot. He stepped out from behind the piano and started to walk to the door very slowly. The anger in his eyes turned into the look of an insane man. We ran and never looked back, or went back to that place. I still don't know what it was, and I hate to think of what would happen if we had not run away. When I was a child, my parents divorced. Both remarried and came up with living arrangements and visitation for my sister and I. We were to live with my dad and visit my mom on the weekends. My stepfather was a good man deep down, but he did have some anger issues. He actually paralyzed my mother, which I didn't know he had done until I was a grown man, but that's a different story. My stepdad had an uncle that in 1983 tried to commit suicide and ended up blowing half of his face off. He was subsequently locked up in a mental institution for the next 7 years. Fast forward to 1990, and old Uncle Johnny, Bundy was his last name actually, is set for release. He has nowhere to go, so we pick him up and bring him to our house to stay for a while. This was my first time meeting him. I'm 6 and my sister is 7, and this man with half of a face that wears an eye patch is moving in. He's gaunt, scary, and talks to himself. He tells me crazy, outlandish, racist stories. He claimed to have beaten up 20 African American men and killed a bunch more, according to him. He tries teaching me made-up karate moves and all sorts of weird things. My mom realizes that this man is batshit crazy and tells us to stay away from him and starts working on a way to get him out of the house. I only see Uncle Johnny on the weekends a few times before my mom has enough and kicks him out. As I said before, my sister and I live at my dad's throughout the week. We have a couple of friends that are our age and a brother and sister as well, and they live across the street. Their names are Robin and Casey. We play with them regularly and are pretty close. One Sunday afternoon, my sister and I were in the house watching the second Wizard of Oz, the weird one with the creepy monkeys that have wheels as hands, when we hear what sounded to us like a series of loud fireworks going off. My dad, who was outside washing his truck, comes running in the house and tells us to go back into his room at the back of the house and stay there. We do and are sitting back there super confused. We hear helicopters landing down the street a short time later. Turns out that my Uncle Johnny was married in 1983, and when he tried committing suicide, his wife Barb left him. I'm not sure if they actually divorced or not, but she had definitely moved. She had gotten with the guy that lived across the street from my dad, who turns out is a cop. After my mom kicked Johnny out, he decided to get revenge on his wife. He went over there and shot both of my friends and killed them. The cop is napping in the back and wakes up to hear gunshots and comes out. They get into a shootout and Johnny gets hit 7 times and dies, and the cop gets hit twice. He lives for a few weeks but ultimately died of his injuries as well. The only survivor was Barb. It was so sad to lose Robin and Casey. They were totally innocent. I believe they were maybe 6 and 7 at the time. Truly a tragedy. The officer's name was Sergeant Robert Preston Palmer of the Ellesmere, Kentucky Police Department. This all happened Labor Day, September 3rd, 1990, if you'd like to read the story. Hey everyone, this is Kyle. So I did look up this event, and I found something on the Greater Cincinnati Police Museum website, and this is what it reads. John Bundy had a history of violence and had been under medical care for mental illness after a suicide attempt in 1983. In that attempt, Bundy blew off half of his face and lost his eye. He was committed to Veterans Administration hospitals, though he was not a veteran, in Cincinnati and Chillicothe. He was diagnosed as having schizophrenia, paranoid type, a mental disorder characterized by delusions, hallucinations such as hearing voices, unfocused anxiety, anger, tendency to argue, and violence. During 1989, one doctor wrote in his record that he was remarkably dangerous, based on statements Bundy made with regard to his family. During January 1990, Ted Bundy, his brother, tried to persuade the Veterans Affairs Medical Center at Chillicothe not to release John to a halfway house. On February 1st, 1990, they released him. That month, he bought a .38 caliber revolver in Chillicothe, Ohio at a discount store. Barbara, Bundy's wife, divorced him soon after his suicide attempt. Later, Barbara met Robert Palmer. He had joined the Ellesmere Police Department about 1979 and was later promoted to sergeant. Barbara married Sergeant Palmer, and by 1990 they had 2 children together, J.C. Palmer 4, and Robin Palmer 3. About March 1990, they moved into a mobile home at 158 Seneca Trail in Ellesmere, Kentucky. On Labor Day, September 3, 1990, shortly before noon, Bundy drove to the Palmer's home, got out of his maroon Dodge Charger piled high with clothes and other belongings, walked towards the front door, passing Casey, who was playing in the front yard, and into the home, carrying the .38 caliber revolver. He shot Robin in the back and right calf, then turned and fired through the front door, striking Casey in the chest, and then engaged Sergeant Preston, who was in the bedroom with his 9mm semi-automatic pistol. In the ensuing firefight, Bundy was hit 7 times in the neck, chest, abdomen, and left arm, and Sergeant Palmer twice in the chest and right upper leg. Mrs. Palmer was not injured. Neighbors called the police. By the time they arrived, Bundy and Casey were dead. Sergeant Palmer was in life-threatening condition with a collapsed lung. Robin was dying in her mother's arms in the front yard. University of Cincinnati Air Care responded and administered to Robin for an hour before she also died. Sergeant Palmer was rushed to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center with gunshot wounds to his chest and upper right leg. During surgery, physicians removed a portion of his right lung and had to reinflate the other, which had partially collapsed. Sergeant Palmer's lungs deteriorated over the next 3 weeks and his kidneys were beginning to fail. Doctors tried an experimental artificial lung implant in Pennsylvania State University's Milton S. Hershey Medical Center. On September 30, 1990, he became the 10th person to receive the implant. However, on the night of September 25, 1990, he passed away. Kyle here again. I know what you're all thinking. The last name Bundy is ringing in your ears. I was thinking there had to be some kind of connection. But while the infamous serial killer Ted Bundy's stepfather was actually named Johnny Bundy, Ted Bundy, the serial killer, was executed in 1989, while the police department museum states that a Ted Bundy, in this case, called the VA about his brother, not his stepfather, Johnny, in 1990. I tried to find a photo of this man, but unfortunately was not able to. It was 2018 and my family had just moved into a new apartment. I was in college at the time, so I wasn't home very much. I was basically only at home during the night. One night I had come home from school really late. I had stayed in a friend's dorm for a while and had a few drinks. It was roughly 1 a.m. when I finally got home. As I entered the building and made my way to my apartment, I heard a soft giggle come from down the hallway. I looked down the hallway and saw this tall man standing there. He couldn't be much older than 40. He was panting hard and wearing a black fuzzy robe. He had one of his hands behind his back and he was smiling. I never truly understood the meaning blood ran cold until my eyes laid on him. My blood completely ran cold, and I felt my adrenaline kick in as he slowly started taking steps towards me. I had no idea of what to do. I didn't have my purse, which had my pepper spray in it. The only thing I had to defend myself was my keys. I asked the man,
"Sir, do you need help?"
As he continued to walk towards me and ignore my question. After he took a few more steps, that's when I freaked out and ran. As I sprinted towards the door leading outside, I heard his loud footsteps right behind me. As I reached the door, I looked behind me to see the man running towards me full speed with a huge butcher knife in his hand. I let out a loud scream and ran out of the building. I didn't hear him follow me outside, so after running for another 10 minutes, I stopped to catch my breath. After that, I called 911 and told them what happened. They did a sloppy search of looking throughout the building, but came back empty-handed. I've never really stayed out late since then. So, creepy knife man from my apartment. let's not meet again. This happened to my boss several years ago. She has 4 children, and when they were younger, she was driving along in one of those 7-seater people carriers when it broke down on the side of the motorway. She pulled over onto the hard shoulder and put on her hazard lights, got the kids out of the car, and went behind the barrier and called AA and her husband. All the standard stuff. About 10 or 20 minutes later, a call pulls up behind her with a rather good-looking, nice chap in it. He says he lives just off the next turning and had seen her and decided to circle back to see if she needed any help. All the way through this, my boss says he didn't throw up any red flags. He just seemed genuinely concerned about the kids being on the side of the road and offered to take her back for a cup of tea and to wait for the AA. He even said you can call the AA and your husband and tell them where you are just to be safe. Again, my boss is very sweet and kind and thinks the best of people, and still no red flags. She turns him down only because she has 4 kids with her. She said if she had been on her own, she probably would have taken him up on the offer, as he seemed so genuinely kind. She turned him down because she didn't want to take the children back to a stranger's house, not because of mistrust. He sort of pushed it a little bit more and then shrugged and left. A couple of weeks later, she saw his photo in the paper. He had stopped to help another woman who had broken down on the side of the road, and he had murdered her after offering her a lift. To this day, she maintains that she genuinely didn't see any red flags, and the only reason that she's alive is because of her kids. Truly terrifying stories. I realized while making this episode that I didn't share a link regarding a previous episode's story. In episode 55, the last story is about a pet employee and her experience with a man who turned out to be a cannibal. I've shared a link in the description with information about him that the original post contains. I've also shared a photo on my Instagram, at Nightmare Society Radio, and a photo with a link on my Twitter, at society_radio. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.